This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Okay, are we ready for this? Okay. Ready?
Here we go, kids.
Here we go for the 100th time.
100th time. For the 100th. No. That makes me sick. Hi, For the Girls.
This is For the Girls podcast. I'm Nick Westrate.
I'm Jason Black. That's 100th time doing that.
It's 100 times. This is our 100th episode. Welcome to our centennial. This is the podcast where gays, lesbians, bisexual, transgender, queer, all the people, every letter in our alphabet celebrates the four letters of the alphabet we love, D-I-V-A. That's divas. That's iconic female performers.
Yeah, we're a fan cast.
We're
a fan cast, okay? that's what our niche of podcasting is, in which we celebrate, illuminate, fan out on iconic performances. Everyone in the industry, sometimes it's just Nick and I always say this is my bit. I just keep saying this
is your real bit.
This is my real bit. Nick's likes a bit, here's mine. Sometimes it's Nick and I, sometimes it's a guest, sometimes it's an iconic guest, sometimes that iconic guest is our first, third time returner.
That's right. That's right. We have Latoya Morgan on this.
Yes.
Week.
Oh, our everything.
So welcome. Happy to be here.
Thank you for this podcast back. So we could talk to you, Latoya. We did have done this 100 times just so we could talk to you out three of them, okay?
And I am here for it.
Thank you.
But Jason's now trying to skip my bit entirely because, Jason, who is this podcast for?
This is for a podcast with the rule that all good things come in threes.
Ooh, this is a podcast for all you ladies beating the rich man at his game.
This is a podcast for working women.
This is a podcast for gay women screenwriters.
This is a podcast for when Nick and I delve back into mergers and acquisitions.
This is a podcast for literally murdering the patriarchy and then getting rid of the fucking body any way you can.
That's my fantasy. That's my fantasy. That's my fantasy in three ways.
So, Latoya, what are we discussing today?
We're discussing the classic gym. 9 to 5.
Yes. Whoa. Classic. Yes. For our 100th episode.
Oh. Yes. So good.
So good. So many good people wanted to do this episode. We've had battle angels writing in saying, if you ever do 9 to 5, please let me do it. We've had guests after their episode say, oh, please let me come back and do 9 to 5. But Latoya, you told us before, but tell us again, why are you here as the expert on 9 to 5?
I am here as the expert on 9 to 5 because it's probably one of the movies I have seen more than any others. If it is on cable, I watch it. I don't care if it's the beginning, the middle, the end. I sit my ass down and I pay attention to the three divas. Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, and of course, Dolly Parton. Come on. There's just not a better trio in film.
And Latoya skipped funerals, graduations, yes, weddings, yes, because TNT was playing 9 to 5.
Yes, yes.
And it must not be interrupted.
And I have no shame about this. No. It is perfect. It is such a beautiful film.
Really is. I have not seen it, and I don't remember the last time I saw it. So rewatching it, I was kind of like, okay, you know, I think it might be a little aged. And it wasn't. It was still hitting exactly how it should.
And part of the reason is the music. I mean, come on. You used to jump out of the gate with that fucking song. It's like...
Is it the... Out on the street. I know. And we were doing mergers and acquisitions, but it was like the same thing that they did with Let the River Run from our iconic episode of Working Girl, where you just instantly get plopped into a certain feeling and excitement of working, bizarrely working in an office where you're like, ooh, is this going to be about women in the office? I can't. What it's just gonna be. And it has to. And so I was like, whoa, these two iconic songs. But this to me, I don't know, is the greatest movie theme song ever.
It kind of is. It truly, it just is. Just the way that the beat starts. And then the inner cutting of all these women just on their way to work. And some people looking at their watch, walking down the street, drinking their coffee.
Spilling their coffee on their high heels.
Like hitting the alarm clock. I mean, it just, it starts you on the most amazing ride. And the funniest ride. Because there are so many comic gems everywhere. It's about something important. Mm-hmm. But it's couched in comedy, so it's more digestible. It's brilliant. Brilliant.
Out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
Being brilliant tomorrow, because it's our 100th episode, we are giving you a double episode on 9 to 5. Today, we're going to talk about the movie, and tomorrow, we're going to have a bonus episode where we interview Pat Resnick, who wrote the screenplay for 9 to 5.
The brilliant writer. Oh my God, I'm such a fan.
She's and now, so before great. That, I'm going to name the 100 episodes that we've done. So.
Bette Midler, Betty Davis, Pam Grier.
That's there you go. And then Bette Midler again.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you all for coming. Those are what we have covered.
No, but if you want to, everyone who's listening to this, I know that we have millions of new fans that are coming on to celebrate our 100th episode, but go back and download LaToya's previous two episodes, which were on Betty Davis and Pam Grier. They're both completely iconic. And one of them was even recorded live and in person when we could all breathe the same air as each other. And it was a really beautiful day.
It was one of my really favorite episodes. I iconically cried at the end. I was so happy with doing that. And then I think in my mind, when we had you back for Pam Grier, and it was one of our first pandemic ones.
Yes, it was.
Also. And so I remember also just being like, this is everything with LaToya is so unique and special and amazing. LaToya, last time your diva star was rising. Last time we talked to you, all the good things were coming your way. I had a fantasy of asking you this and then you're like, no, it's been really bad. Now let's talk about other working women. Ask you how it was going. I was like, what? That, you know, Jason, that could be a possibility. Like, but LaToya, I know it's not because I'm following you and like, I get like life alert updates every time, like every other week that you're into like a, like, what was the last thing I saw? You're doing a comic book or something
right now? I am. Oh my God. You are following me.
I am following you. You kidding?
Yes. The comic book is an amazing collaboration with Boom Studios. And it's sort of this period sci-fi drama. And it's about a World War II veteran who in 1955, Alabama, comes to understand that he may have some secret abilities. And so he's using those powers to change things in the world. And so it's a lot of fun. It's called Dark Blood. And it's a project that I was working on for a couple of years. And I ended up getting it to Boom and they were really supportive and have been such great shepherds ever since. So it's great.
Ooh, when can we buy it?
You can pre-order it online. So right now it comes out in July, but you can go online, go to Boom Studios or to the previews for Diamond Comics. You can just type in Dark Blood, click on it, amazing, pay your $3 and pick up a really great story.
I love that. And the imagination, just the scope of, and the art, just, and the collaboration involved in making a comic book. It's like a movie in that way, you know?
Absolutely. And on this comic book, we have a wonderful artist named Walt Barna. He's incredible. Beautiful, beautiful drawings, wonderful colorist. It just having it come out this week has been just great, seeing people come out of the woodwork being like, oh my God, I love comics. I can't wait for it. So that was really exciting.
Oh, and then you have your show Duster.
Yes.
How is that going? Have you started shooting? What's going on?
We are in the throes of pre-production. So things are going, hiring department heads, cranking out scripts, getting ready for production in the fall. So it's cranking. It's going. The trains are leaving.
Super vaccinated. And we're going to be able to make a great show with LaToya Morgan as the boss.
I know. I can't believe it. Oh, when you say it like that. Oh, my God. Oh my God, you're terrifying me. Don't terrify me.
You're gonna be the Dabney Coleman of the set.
No, I'm gonna be the good. No, I'll be the Dolly Parton of the set. Yes. The good human of the set.
LaToya, sometimes my biggest achievement is that I only took a nap for 45 minutes instead of an hour. So you put us all to such incredible shame. I mean, you do so much, honey.
I am so grateful to do it every day. This is what I love, and it's my dream come true. So every day I get to do it, I just thank God. You know, it's really fun.
That's the same with us and this talking to you on the podcast. I mean, every episode that you're not on isn't our dream come true, but this one is.
Yay!
Oh.
Okay. Well, we have done 100 episodes, babe. I guess we.
I know.
Do we get a cake? Do we get a? Yeah, we
you
have to
get
celebrate
a cake,
that.
Ice cream, some iced coffee for you, Nick.
Please, have some hot coffee. Yeah, I should have sent you a cake, babe.
Me, babe? Yeah. Oh, I should have sent you a cake too. That was my first thought. So, and I didn't.
How,
so that makes
how about
bad.
I send you both a cake? Okay? Everybody gets cake.
Listen, I don't want Battle Angels mailing us a bunch of cake because that's the last thing I need. But if you want to send us something, send us an iconic review on Apple Podcasts. Smash the download button. Share this episode on all social medias. We're at
like,
For the Girls
subscribe.
Podcast.
Like and yeah, subscribe. Look at that always little, helps. It's always a little 100th present.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, this whole podcast has been a present to me. It's been such a saving grace during COVID to just get to focus, to have an active practice that makes me focus on things I love has been a real lifeboat during all of this, you know?
And just to kind of dive in, just to kind of be like, okay, this is Elizabeth Taylor week. I'm going to do that. This is the Pam Grier week. So, okay, everything's really bad, but at least I can go here. I'm just going to go here and put my energy into here.
Listen, like all kidding aside, just listening to your podcast, the work that you guys are doing, it's such a welcome escape. It really is. It really fills my heart to get to laugh and hear you guys talk about this stuff. The love that you have for the divas is so apparent. So the audience, every time you guys put something out, is getting a really wonderful treat. So give yourselves some flowers because you are doing good work.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Should we get on to our work of the day?
Yes. Working out. So in addition to the three divas that LaToya mentioned, I'd like to mention a couple other divas in this movie. Also, this movie also stars Elizabeth Wilson, Marion Mercer, and Miss Peggy Pope, three of my MVPs from this film. I mean, all the women. I was really taken aback by what an ensemble of women there were and how actually for 1980, I mean, it's not the most diverse cast on earth, But the actual, like, the women filling out the secretarial pool was way more diverse than I remember it being.
Well, I think visually it was, I think the representation is kind of on the shoulders of Maria Delgado, yes. Her character. And she had, does at least have an arc in the film.
Yeah.
But visually it was pretty diverse. I do, of course, wish there were more speaking roles and meaningful parts, but yes. You know, it was, they did okay.
I was also shocked by the fact that so many of these things that they need in the workplace, that they achieve in the workplace, are still seem like fucking pipe dreams.
It's tragic, actually. It's so sad that the things that they were fighting for in this movie, we still haven't gotten. Like, regular daycare, equal pay, and these seem like no-brainers. And they were in 1980 on the cutting edge of asking for it, and we are in 2021, and we still don't have some of those things. It's ridiculous.
I think that's why that does it so unfortunately doesn't feel dated.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, yeah, there's going to need to be some tweaking on this, but oh my gosh, like, this was being talked about so long ago, and there's been such little accomplishment in the workplace. It's pretty tragic.
Well, no, it's insane. But the one thing that did come true is kind of like the flex work schedule, because now I can't even tell you the sheer number of hours I work. They are not 9 to 5, that's for sure.
Right. Because of the pandemic too, like the flex work schedule, but oh yeah, 41 years later, we're finally starting to disrupt the kind of capitalist work wheel that was built. And I mean, you also think, like, this movie came out and Reagan was just elected and started his like 8-year reign of capitalist terror on this country, and we just have never recovered. It sucks. It's like the Carter administration was maybe leading us to a direction that, like, mm-hmm. Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda and Dolly and would be proud of, but fuck, sorry to get political.
I mean, Pat Resnick did an interview about kind of talking about 9 to 5 and what's been updating. She's like, actually, I think people nowadays would really like to work a 9 to 5. That doesn't even exist anymore. Like, you don't stop after 5. No one does.
Kind of right.
And she's like, you kind of work constantly. You are always at the touch of your boss's button. When you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
And I feel like I talked to the few friends I have in the office, they, under their understanding, is that it never ends. Like, there's never an end to the work. You know, it's like the office hour ends, but they're still constantly having to go overtime just to keep it going, not ever to stay ahead. So,
and this movie was based on the actual 9 to 5 movement that was going on at this time, mm-hmm. which was also known as the National Association of Working Women, or the Working Women Organizing Project. And that was founded by lots of different women, but headed originally by Karen Nussbaum. And their goal was to organize women office workers coast to coast. And they actually met with Jane Fonda and inspired this movie. And there was just a cool documentary about them called 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement, that just came out last year. So everyone should rent that.
Yeah, the great thing about that documentary and about the story of how this movie came about is that Ms. Nussbaum met Jane Fonda at like an anti-war protest. And so that's how they met, and they just stayed in touch. And like, Jane Fonda, this is why I love Jane Fonda. I'm not gonna go into full fangirl, but just know Jane Fonda, that's my diva. I absolutely adore her. She is phenomenal, but she's always like really talk the talk and walk the walk, using her platform to elevate issues that are so important to so many still now. But just the fact that she was just a real one, she was like, oh yeah, I'll go stay on your couch. I will go talk to all these workers. I will. And, mm-hmm. and the germ of the story began to form. And Jane Fonda had just started her own production company. I think it was called IPC Films, because she was an outspoken anti-war protester and it was costing her a lot of jobs. And so if she couldn't be in front of the camera, she decided she wanted to produce. Mm. So this was actually one of the first movies that she produced under her banner with Bruce Gilbert, I think is his name. And yeah, it's just, it launched not just her career as a producer, but a movement.
Better life, and you think about it, don't you? It's a rich man's game, no matter
Jane Fonda, like we said, Jane, this was her baby.
Yes.
And then she had Pat Resnick write a script, as we said, where it's coming out. And it was more of a drama. It was kind of more, in the initial script, as we were going to find out soon, they wanted the boss deadzos.
Oh my God, no, they were really going to kill him. Like, it was going to be a straight up murder drama. And then Jane Fonda's like, maybe that's too dark. And so she really started to like have a conversation about how to make it a really dark black comedy. Because she was really sensitive to soapboxing and, you know, talking about issues in that way, because sometimes they don't penetrate. And I think that is one of the genius moves of this movie, is to sort of hide the medicine in the milkshake by having it really be about something, but having people laugh along the way so that it resonates.
I feel like the current thing of medicine and milkshake is hide the spinach in the smoothie.
Yes. Yes, you need, like, a lot you of need the vitamins.
Like, yummy smoothie, but it actually does just ground it up.
The goodness.
Isn't this kind of an unusual world for Jane Fonda? Rewatching this, I was like, this seems off type for Jane Fonda. She's kind of more that's conservative. What do you think?
No, I think that's a great question. I think there's a lot of misnomers about like Jane's career. I think people, you wouldn't guess it because all of her work and all of her recognition is from such, you know, amazing dramas. But she has done amazing and fantastic comedies. You know, she did Barbarella in the late 60s. She did that movie Fun with Dick and Jane in the early 70s. So she is adept at comedy. And in the 70s, she was on this hot streak. Like right before making 9 to 5, she had done Julia in 1977. She had done Coming Home in 78 and won the Oscar. She did China Syndrome 79, which was so prescient. And then she did 9 to 5 in 1980.
It's such an amazing career shift too. Like after those very, like she was on like her Meryl Streep run. And then she just takes this turn. And it's so, because she's like, proves herself to be an incredible physical comedian in this fucking movie. At the very beginning with the elevator and trying to get in the elevator and getting caught.
But she was so fun, but she is like such a great physical comedian. And she was also very smart to cast herself in the role that she did. She could have easily said, I'm Violet Newstead, but it was so smart for her to cast herself as the mousy, like the opposite of herself. I just thought it was genius.
It's quite a day for me.
I bet it is.
I was so excited. I left an hour early so I wouldn't be late.
Uh-huh.
I'm certainly glad I did. It took me 45 minutes just to find a parking place.
Right here. Well, we park inside the building. I'll show you how to punch in.
And I just moved to a new apartment near the airport.
Huh.
It's so funny, early in Judy's arrival at Consolidated, which is the company they all work at.
Yep.
She's kind of clocking that, oh wait, you don't get breaks? Oh wait, you don't talk about how much money you make. And you can see like Jane's like Antifa roots just under there, like Judy as Judy is having her like socialist awakening in the office secretarial pool. It's really great.
Well, that step off of the elevator also like is a bridge to one of my all-time favorite lines of the movie. Like it tees up Lily Tomlin perfectly because she just looks at her as she's looking around and she's like,
we're going to need a special locker for the hat.
And I just love that line so much. It's perfect.
Oh, my other favorite line from that moment is when she looks out on the floor of all these secretaries and she goes,
well, welcome to the front lines.
Yes. Yes. It's so good.
I think this was Lily's like kind of a subtle character thing is that she always wears the same schmock.
It's her work kimono.
Which she's it's like, not- no, this is, I'm more simple. I don't, this is my thing.
Well, Well, I loved her work smock, and I just want to give a shout out to Anne Roth, who did the costumes for this movie, because they all had such beautiful and distinct looks, and the work smock, what you're talking about, was so iconic, and my mom worked in a company like that. My mom worked in an insurance company. She was constantly like typing on one of those typewriters, and she would wear like that works, man. So I felt seen in that movie. It resonated with me on a deeply personal level.
Mm. She had like her different outfit changes, but then a one coat that she would wear.
Yes, the beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful too. It was blue. Yeah. It brought out her gorgeous eyes. It was great.
Ooh, fucking shout outs to Anne Roth, who everyone on this podcast knows I love and have worked with a couple times, and just became the oldest woman to ever win an Academy Award
for amazing. Her
astonishing clothes in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Beautiful. Such beautiful. She's
a queen. She really is the great one. From The Graduate to The English yes. Patient to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf to...
It's not even close. You're right.
She's just the greatest. I'm so glad she didn't try to go to those maskless Academy Awards at the age of 89. She was like, no, thank you. I'm going to be hanging out on my farm. Absolutely not. Also, I love from the very jump, I had forgotten about this part of the movie, Roz Keith shows up, who's yes. kind of the like junior villain in the movie, mm-hmm. Played by
Elizabeth Wilson.
Yes, Elizabeth Wilson, who's so fucking hilarious in this and almost as like terrible as Dabney Coleman.
Oh, hello.
Judy Burnley, Roz Keith. Roz is Mr. Hart's administrative assistant. Judy is starting today.
Oh, uh-huh. Fondue, it's nice to meet you.
How do you do? Welcome to Consolidated. I hope you enjoy it here.
Thank you.
We're all a pretty... happy bunch?
I think so.
Here, Violet, you can put this up on the bulletin board.
Thanks, Roz. I know just where to stick it.
Good. And, Judy, if there is anything I can do to help you settle in, just drop on by. Thank you.
I mean, when I think of her, I think of her, like, stuck in, like, the bathroom stall writing notes on toilet paper. Like, when I think of that character, I'm just like, girl, what are you doing?
Oh, that would be me. That's where the gossip is. I would literally have, like, my own personal lock on the stall where people would be like, I think it's jammed to get it. It would just be me being like, no, that's, you can't get in here because this is my office. This is the only way I can live is getting all of this intel.
All the tea. She had all the tea.
All the tea. But then I was thinking, like, man, I'm never speaking in a bathroom again. If someone wants
to, I know.
Ever. I'm never speaking in a public bathroom again.
Isn't that also
because normally I speak a lot. Normally I call my mom when I'm in a public restroom and tell her about my depression.
How they get called out in Mad Money, Jay? Don't they get caught?
Is it?
Because they're always having their secret meetings in Mad Money in the bathroom.
Listen, honey, I thought we did 15 episodes. I didn't know we did 100. So now you're asking me to remember a Patreon episode of Mad Money? And about what?
I'm going to be referencing all iconic trio diva movies. Mad Money, The First Wives Club. Come on. I mean, 9 to 5 started it all. It was like, you need three divas and an outstanding supporting cast of women and maybe one good man. And that's all you need in the movie.
And come on, we gotta give some love to Dabney Coleman. Brilliant in this movie. He was kind of like, he had a thankless job to do. He did it with relish. It was great. I mean, come on. When I hear the words sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot, I think of him. So that is our contribution to cinematic history.
I enjoyed that he wasn't a Disney villain. I enjoyed that he was just an insidious pig boss. Do you know what I mean? Who still ran the office at a competent level and got away with as far as he could every day, you know, to demean women. I love that. I love that, like, and I think that's what has left such an impression is that so many people have been able to identify themselves with this film. It's real enough within the slapstick that they're like, yes, this is my everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Well, my favorite thing about him too is I saw this interview from around 1980 when it came out. You know, they're on that promotional tour, and Dabney Coleman basically said his character had no redeeming qualities, and he said he was just there to work with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin and Dolly Parton. He said they were phenomenal, and the interviewer asked him a really interesting question. He asked, you know, was Dolly out of sorts because this was her first film, and he said no, she was great, like she was wonderful and everybody was really helpful to her, and he just talked about the different energy they all had, and he talked about how Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin were very similar, which I actually agree with, and Dolly was her own like special magic, but I don't think there are two actresses who are as adept at doing comedy and drama than Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda.
Oh, especially after the set, like we talked about where Jane was in the 1970s, but Lily at that time, you know, Lily Tomlin is from Detroit, Michigan. She's from Michigan, like me and Jay. Woo-hoo. And she went to Wayne State University, studied biology, but then started doing stand-up on the weekends. And she's doing stand-up in Detroit. She moves to New York, is working off-Broadway when she gets a job on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. In 1969. Yep. And that's where she developed characters like Ernestine, the snorting telephone operator, Mrs. Judith Beasley, Mrs. Earborn, the tasteful lady, Trudy, the sorority girl, and of course, Edith Ann. And these characters would go on to become like the backbone of her stand-up albums, which two of which I recently found out are the two best charting comedy albums by a woman of all time. Wow. The only other woman to come close is, of course, Joan Rivers. And so she's doing all this stand-up and all these crazy characters. And then, like you said, she starts working with Robert Altman.
And yes, Nashville, baby.
Making Nashville, getting nominated for the Oscar, making The Late Show opposite Art Carney, for which she won the Silver Bear and was nominated for the Golden Globe, and also doing her comedy shows on Broadway. She had a Broadway show in 1977 called Appearing Nightly that was at the Biltmore Theater. So she had both of these worlds so fully fleshed out through the 70s that when she shows up, just her simplicity in this film. Yes. She's just steel-spined and deadpan and being a fucking boss.
So good. Like, it just, you, as you were talking, it made me think two things. One, we have to just talk about that this movie, 9 to 5, was the second highest grossing film of that year. It made over $100 million, second only to The Empire Strikes Back. That is bonkers. That is insane. And as you're talking about her being badass, it just reminded me of the shot that, of course, reminds me of my mom. And it's just a shot of her at her desk, and the camera's like dollying around, and she's going, Violet Newstead, please hold. Violet Newstead, please hold. She's answering all these calls.
Violet Newstead, please hold. Hi, this is Violet. Oh, Charlotte, I've got it right here. I'm just waiting for your call. That route is 32 via Dixie Express. Don't worry, I've got it under control. Okay, bye-bye. Violet News. Oh, come on, kids. No, come on, no fighting. Believe me, there is more than one peanut butter and banana sandwich in the world. What did I say this morning? Okay, love you too. No, I don't want to talk to the dog. Bye-bye.
It is sheer genius. It is perfect. She's so dialed in and great. I adore her.
What is her position at Collective Operations,
Consolidated.
She's a supervisor, right? She is under Franklin Hart.
Yeah, and she needs a promotion, and she deserves a promotion. It seems like she trains everybody. She trained Franklin Hart, and then she ends up, and I love this scene when she thinks she's going to get the promotion. And then he gives it to the guy, some other motherfucker that she trained.
Yeah, she just
loses it.
Well, my favorite thing about that scene is just how it just jumps you right in there. It's just such good editing where we have heard her set it up in the previous scene that she's waiting for this promotion. And then it cuts to her saying, what? Like, just in disbelief. Like, I cannot believe you've overlooked me again for a promotion. It's great.
What? Now, let me finish, okay? And don't go flying off the handle.
You gave that promotion to Bob Enright instead of me? I've got 5 years seniority over him.
I know that.
For Christ's sake, I trained him.
I know that, but see, the company...
the company bullshit. It's your decision. You promoted him. You tell me why.
Well, in the first place, see, Bob does have a college degree.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. While he's away at college getting his precious, useless degree, I'm working my butt off at this company.
And in the second place, he does have a family to support.
And I don't? What has that got to do with anything?
Violet, look, my hands are tied here. The company needs a man in this position. Clients would rather deal with men when it comes to figures.
Oh, now we're getting at it. I lose a promotion because of some idiot prejudice. The boys in the club are threatened, and you're so intimidated by any woman that won't sit at the back of the bus.
Spare me the women's lib crap, okay? Now, I know how you feel, and I understand it.
You understand zilch.
The writing and editing is so expert in this. The build yeah. and the, you know, it's like you can see some of the mechanics, and then they and you love it. You love when they keep upping the stakes, but then they also do what I just feel like is sorely lacking in current films is giving room to breathe with the characters, just to talk mm-hmm. and share and kind of get you into their bond, get you yeah. into their own individual personalities that then in that then gets you more invested in the kind of hijink stakes that occur throughout the film. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, absolutely.
I was just kind of loving how these plot mechanics played out. It was so fun and beautiful. It was giving me all the moments I wanted. Every time I was like, ooh, I want something else, they would do it.
I also am so amazed by how Pat Resnick in this script, how subtle the exposition is. Just how yep. subtle it's built in there. Like just little things you learn about Judy and Dora Lee and Violet throughout the first 15, 20 minutes of the film that come to just pay off so perfectly later without ever seeming like she's weaving a really intricate little plot and character story at the same time.
It came out of research, right? Just talking uh-huh. to all those workers. And I love how she talks about how she came to build the character for Dora Lee based on a real woman who everyone that she was interviewing was talking trash about this one woman in the office thinking that she had slept with the boss. And she took her to lunch and the woman said that she didn't. And she literally wept in the interview. And it was just so heartbreaking. But it was such a great thing to graft onto Dolly Parton's character.
What did Margaret mean about Dora Lee?
Well, rumor has it that she is banging the boss.
She and Mr. Hart?
I think that's awful. Well, live and let live. Though, frankly, I credit her with more brains, certainly more taste.
That's how my husband left. He was having an affair with his secretary.
Well, I don't think Hart's going to leave his wife. She's been too good a meal ticket all these years. Besides, she's bananas. She adores him, if you can imagine.
That breaks my heart when the movie starts and they are all. I mean, that's the thing about Roz too, right? Like the most insidious thing about Dabney Coleman is that his character has turned the women against each other,
mm-hmm,
which
absolutely.
Is always what the man tries to do to break down solidarity, and so. Dora Lee is, and Dolly is so, she's the carrying the pain of a woman who has been objectified her whole life. And she's carrying that pain with such dignity and grace, but it was breaking my heart.
Oh, so sad. She goes and sits lunch by herself. I'm like, no, it's heartbreaking.
I hate that. That's one of the worst parts of that film for me is
why?
He has ostracized her to make it really his own. Like the only person she really has in that office is not her sisters, but him. The only person she now can really connect with or have human communication with is him. That always gets me. Always gets me when you're carrying a tray. I mean, it's triggering for anyone. When you're carrying tray totally. To the freaking, to the war zone that is the lunch period. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, not with me, you don't sit.
Oh, hi, Judy. How's everything going?
Fine, thanks.
Hey, how would you like to have lunch with me today?
Well, I'm afraid I can't, thanks.
Well, maybe tomorrow. I know the cutest little Italian restaurant, just a hop, skip, and a jump from here.
Well, I think I should stay in the office and get to know the routine. But thanks anyway.
Yeah, sure.
I want to give a shout out to the director, Colin Higgins. He punched up the script that Patricia wrote. And mm-hmm. she gives him a shout out in the when we interview her. He's a real for the... I'm a real for him. This is a real for him's moment. He wrote Harold and Maude.
Yes, he did.
Ooh.
He directed a Foul Play.
Yeah, with Goldie Hawn and Chevy Chase.
Yes. Oh. He did Silver Streak. He did 9 to 5. And then his last real directing was The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. With our Dolly again. He wrote and directed that. And then his last credit was in 87. He had a writing and producing credit on Out on the Limb with our Shirley MacLaine. We don't do enough Shirley MacLaine here. And I need to announce we need to do
Queen.
That more. Queen.
I know. She's everything.
Listen, for The Apartment alone, I will forever love this woman. So good.
And then he was an out gay person in Hollywood, which was major. Mm-hmm. And he died of AIDS in 88 at the age of 47.
Oh.
And so, but I just, he gave us some great stuff, and I just want to celebrate him a little bit. And like we said, in our Pat episode, she really says he brought a lot of the humor. So a lot mm-hmm. of the kind of lines that we really remember, she's really honored him and said he really did a lot of that. Like, he really kind of shaped that and did that. I was like, did you always have the original death fantasy scenes? Because those are my favorite.
Oh my God, it's brilliant.
She's like, always. She's like, that's how we got to kill him over and over again. And I was like, that's exactly what you want. You know, like, we all have these things of taking down our nemesis who is in the control power, you know, mm-hmm. situation. And you're just like, how in the world can I bring you down? Well, it's only in a Disney sequence in which I launch you out of a fucking window with little animated birds singing. Like, that's all I can think of.
As a kid, that was like my favorite thing, the animated yes. thing. I fell in love with Lily Tomlin because of that. Her, like, with the birds and, like, bringing in the little coffee cup with the poison thing that comes out of it. It just was, come on, how can you not love her? It was fucking amazing.
Violet, get me some coffee.
Yes, sir.
The cinematography of those three distinct fantasy sequences is so beautiful, too. So here's another him I'll give a shout out to, Reynaldo Villalobos, who is the cinematographer of this movie. Mm. And these, like, three distinct fantasy sequences, I feel like Jane Fonda's, it's like it's out of a Robert Rodriguez film.
Yes.
You know, like, the shadows. It's like very graphic novel. It feels like Sin City almost.
Yeah. And then you have the duck hunting thing. Like, it's such a gamer, almost weirdly gamer thing where he's literally a sitting duck running back yeah. and forth. And I love the callback to basically bad things happen in the bathroom. She finally finds him. He's in the women's bathroom hiding.
Hi.
Oh, it's so brilliant. And it's set up so beautifully because one of the first things she says when she walks into his office is, oh, a deer. Like, because there's a mounted deer in his office. And
I love of course that she too. Shoots him.
Yeah,
like,
it's
Judy
great.
Is like, can't even imagine that you would kill something.
Exactly. And that's why when at the end, when she's literally fighting for her life with him, when he's like swinging from the thing, yes. trying to escape, it's, she has to like punch him. She has to hit him. She has to really get in there. It's really great. It's so fun.
Fuck. And then Dolly's fantasy is so sexy.
Yes.
Like,
come on.
When she's literally hog tying and roasting him over a fire. It's like this very like S&M moment that I'm here for.
I love this because Dolly has always been coy about her sex, you know, has always presented very, I say garish, and I use that word with only terms of endearment because I love it.
I think she would agree. I think she would. Yes. She would say that. Yeah.
Yes. You know, and garish. Come on, give me more garish.
She's like,
I want to look like.
Yeah, she's like, she's underneath all the paint and the wigs, and is a brilliant, really kind-hearted woman who,
and
even
smart.
Now, is changing the world. Yeah, she's brilliant.
And so smart in the way that people constantly want, like, she'll make the joke first. People always want to talk about how she's presenting herself with the wigs, with the nails, with the tight tops, you know, and the mm-hmm. small bottoms. And so to see this and to see her in the position of understanding that power and that dynamic and how she looks and how she then resexualizes the boss, and have Dolly Parton do that was so iconic to me.
It was. That is the word too. It is iconic. I mean, and some of my favorite lines in that, there's so many in that one scene, but when she turns the tables on him and she says,
hey, hot stuff. Grab your pad and pencil and get your buns in here.
Yes, ma'am. Morning.
Hold it. Just hold it right there.
Something wrong?
No, no, nothing's wrong. I just want to check your bod. Turn around for a second. Oh, you got a nice ass frame. But you know you ought to get your pants cut a little tighter. You need to bring them up just a little in the crotch. I mean, you got a nice package. You might as well show it off.
Oh, Mrs. Rhodes.
Come over here. I want you to take a memo.
She says,
forget about your wife, Frank. I mean, you may be hers in the evening, but you're my boy from 9 to 5.
It's like, yes, yes.
And then forces him to motorboat her into these pillows that everyone's constantly talking about and wanting, and using that as an aggression and like something that's like an assault to this like man, you know, like using her greatest tools or whatever. So I'll do a quick Dolly dump right now on this. Dolly, this is Dolly's, we said this is Dolly's first film. Everyone knows Dolly. I'm not going to get into it too much. She moved to Nashville. She became famous as a songwriter. She had a hit with Dumb Blonde, which to me, like looking at this and then going to this film, going from Dumb Blonde to this film and all the things that she does, like being the dumb secretary, you know, like that's, and it's so not written as that, right? Like they're so, they don't make her an airhead, which I'm obsessed with. In my memory, before rewatching this, like Dolly Parton, this plays this kind of cute, she's not at all. She is tough as nails, and she's actually like, kind of one of the people that stays in most control level, like most, like never spirals. Dolly never spirals. The other two are kind of become kind of
hysterical.
Listen, real okay, we're gonna talk about that, but because I'm just gonna say it. Like, there's a moment. There's one of my favorite moments. It's just a look, but when after they've stolen the body and like they're in the car and they're driving, trying to figure out what to do, Dolly Parton is sitting in the middle of Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. She just looks at both of them. She just looks at them like, I cannot believe I'm in this mess with you bitches. It is perfect.
She is so put out. She is so put out in that scene. She's just like, this is awful. You buffoons are like making all of the weird, wrong decisions right now. And I'm not going to be in this. And so then Dolly went on to do Porter Wagner, and she was his girl. He got rid of his first girl and then had her be on his show. And that was, it was called, it was a girl singer. That was her title. And so she did that for 5 years, and she was like, no, goodbye. She had her own show. She had a bunch of hits during that. As we all know, she did Jolene and Code of Many Colors. Here We Come Again. It was in like 76. And so she was touring. She was doing so many amazing things. She had a lot of scripts coming to her, but she kind of was turning it down. And then Jane Fonda went to Dolly Parton.
Because she's so smart.
So because she is genius. And she was like, I think that this could work for you. And a little tidbit that I found out that I absolutely love. Dolly, who had never been in a film, memorized the whole script from front to back because she thought that's how it was shot. She thought it was going to go scene to scene. And so she's there on set quickly realizing that a lot of the time she's going to be utterly bored and having nothing to do because that's not how films work. And in her contract, she said, I want to do the theme song.
That's such a shrewd, shrewd business move. I love it.
Isn't that so smart? And so she's sitting there bored in her trailer and she starts playing with her press-ons. She starts playing with those acrylics and she starts hearing that when she rubs them together, it makes a typewriter. We all know the story. She started hearing the typewriter and then the song came to her. 9 to 5 came to her. And she had everyone, when she did the demo, every woman working on that set come down to sing it with her.
Oh, I love that.
And that's how it was recorded and made.
That really got me. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Well, I think it got nominated for at least a Grammy and an Oscar.
It lost to Fame. I will tell you, if anyone wants a really strange kind of out of body moment, you should see her performing on the Oscars. She comes in full Mae West drag with a slit all the way up to her side. And she's coming and she's just kind of stomping around in her Dolly heels. And then all of a sudden, it's just a bunch of men in different work drag that come out and do an crazy choreo dancing around her. So it's a little bit of a disconnect with that song and like over like 20 men in like hard hats, like doing really like Broadway flies around the stage. But if anyone wants to, it's on YouTube. It's 1981. And yeah, so she lost that to Fame. But she was nominated for a Golden Globe. The song was also nominated for a Golden Globe. And then, of course, she went on to be nominated again for Transamerica in 2005 for Traveling Through. So Dolly has had some Oscars. Kind of crazy that she hasn't won.
But... I mean, I can really set fire to this entire Academy Awards for not nominating 9 to 5 for Best Picture. But, you know, I can get rid of Elephant Man. I can get rid of Raging Bull. I can get rid of Tess. I mean, I'm still here for Ordinary People.
I was going to say, don't cut Ordinary People. Yeah. Well, that was a good year for women, though.
That was. It was. But I just, I also, you know, I have a huge thing about I wish comedies were nominated more. I always do. And so, I mean, that year was Goldie Hawn for Private Benjamin, which I'm A+ there for. And also Mary Tyler Moore in Ordinary People is one of my favorite performances of all time. It, I've only watched it once because I cried so hard I thought I was going to die. And so I can't watch that movie again. It's one so I cannot see again.
Oh my God. I love it. I've seen it a bunch of times. It's one of my favorite screenplays. Like the subtlety in the emotional impact. Shout out Alvin Sargent.
Won the Oscar for that, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's just so... I think it hits really home with me and my family, so I can't.
Yeah, that French toast scene, man. I can see that over and over and over.
It's a darkness.
And the photo scene. Oh, my God. When they're taking the family photo, you're just like, please.
It's the garage scene for me. When isn't it Mary Tyler Moore in the garage when she finally has the breakdown before going inside? I can't.
Yeah.
I can't even think about it.
You know what scene I liked is when Lily Tomlin is getting the coffee for her boss.
Back to 9 to 5. Okay, wait, let's talk about the biggest.
But wait, can I just say though, I swear to God, when I watched this movie, I was like, because I am a girl, I'm a pink packet girl. I'm a sweet little child.
Yep,
and so I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I didn't know that there was something called skinny and sweet. And Googling as much as I could to get skinny and sweet sent to my house, only to find out it was a fucking prop. I was like, I must have something called skinny and sweet. I must have this.
The fact that the absurdity of fucking skinny and sweet looking like Riddle Rat is just like, come on, y'all. I mean, you just gotta go with it. You gotta go with it.
Clowns.
I don't believe it. Violet, how could you make such a stupid mistake?
I thought it was skinny and sweet. Here, look at the box. They are identical except for the little skull and crossbones on the label.
I just love that this movie was directed and written by gay people. I just love that.
Yes,
you can really feel the sensibility of a gay man and a gay woman. Like, kind of just fucking with gender roles and sending this all around and also having that camp sensibility of this big yellow box of porn.
Yes, with red writing. It's the exact same box. It's so brilliant.
And then getting them both for the office too, as if like her other job is to kill rats with the rat poison. So it would make sense.
That was for home.
That was for her house.
Oh, that was her home. Oh, oops. Oh, can I tell you about gender roles though with her home? I love that she's a single mom in it and they don't have to like constantly, she doesn't have to talk about it.
Yeah, she's a widow.
Oh, a widow.
So the only time you really see her family is you see her older son giving her a joint. She's like, stick it in my purse. And then that's when they have their pot party. It's so funny.
Oh my God, the pot party. The pot party is possibly that whole scene at the bar when they all go to get drunk together and they finally like unite.
Yep.
It's so fucking amazing.
It's great.
There's this iconic, I was watching some outtakes this morning, and they're doing the pot scene, and Lily's going, ha, 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 like doing the back and forth, like just totally into it, and she goes, ha, 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 okay, I'm done. I can't do that again. I'm done. And then they all start laughing again because she's just turns right off. Like, then they all start sending into actual laughter at that.
But that's also
that
what
was
I was
so me.
I was struck so by what an amazing actress Dolly is. She's just like fake laughter, fake getting high, like acting, all that stuff is like some of the toughest stuff you can do, like genuine joy and laughter like that. And she's just rolling with these two Oscar nominated geniuses.
Oh, yeah.
And just, it's so real and fun. And just the pure joy of it just sends me there.
Well, they talked about she has this wonderful book called Dolly Songteller. It's about all the lyrics, you know, to her songs. And of course, before this, I looked up what she said about, you know, 9 to 5. But one of the things she talks about in her interviews is she says that Jane and Lily were so great at helping her with the camera, because she was very comfortable with the camera because of her early work. But she would look into the camera doing that because she was singing to the audience. Right. So they had to tell her, like, you know, don't look at the camera, and hey, this is how you hit your mark. And she just talked about how generous they were doing that. It just warmed my heart.
I think you're stoned. Oh, it's so funny.
What's so funny? Oh.
Now we need to talk about the great scene of the film, the theft of an actual corpse.
It's brilliant. That's always been my favorite scene. Yes, oh my God. It is, because the genius of Lily Tomlin is so apparent and obvious. Like, the way she just starts to melt down, it is just, I keep saying brilliant because it is genius. It is so, so good. And it's all an all-encompassing performance, right? They have the great lines that they're going to say, but it's just her, like, looking at the necklace that she has on her neck and just, like, being jittery and, you know, just going to find the gurney to push down the hall. It's just, it's so good.
Because first she goes to hysteria with the whole, it's over, I'm a murderess.
Well, it's all over. Did you hear? An autopsy? I might as well just save him the trouble and give him the rat poison.
Violet! Well,
give that to me. Are you crazy? You want someone to see it? Well, who cares? I'm finished. I'm a murderer.
No, you're not.
I'm a murderess. My poor kids. Violet, you're nothing until proven guilty.
You know they're going to find the poison when they do the autopsy on the body.
I'm going to get rid of the poison.
No, no.
I'll get rid of the body.
No. Violet, it's not murder. There are extenuating circumstances. It was an accident. An accident? She was thinking about doing it last night. We were all thinking about doing it last night.
But you didn't do it on purpose. Oh, maybe unconsciously I did. It's no use. I'm going to go to the pen.
We better get her a lawyer.
I'm going to be locked up for life.
Where's the phone? Over there.
Do you have any change?
I think so.
I just sit right here. I'm going to lose my job.
Violet, now just calm down.
I'm no fool. I've killed the boss. You think they're not going to fire me for a thing like that?
Now hush. Now just sit here. We'll be right back.
You know, like, no, I'm a murderess.
And then she goes into full, like, I don't even know what it is, like denial or coping, when she starts stealing the corpse, and it's so deadpan, and she's just marching with that up to the fucking scene with the candy striper.
Excuse me, could you tell me where the coffee shop is, please?
What?
The coffee shop.
The coffee shop? No, I'm new here. I don't drink coffee.
I'm new here, too. Where do you work?
Downstairs.
In the morgue?
That's right.
Then he's...
Yes, he is.
How did he...
Coffee. Too much coffee. I'm just taking him out for some air. I mean, some fresh air for me. He's just coming along for the ride. What?
You're a doctor. I didn't see your badge. Sorry.
I'm a doctor. So why the hell am I talking to you? Piss off.
Well, it's like she put on that coat, and once she realizes she's a doctor, she then becomes the doctor. She's like, okay, I've lost my identity. I am a doctor now, wheeling this patient around. I am now authority.
My favorite line of the whole thing, and there's so many brilliant parts of that sequence, but Judy asks, like, Dolly, like, how's Violet? She's like,
oh, honey, I think Violet has flipped out. And it's so good.
She was literally pushing the gurney out the door, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so good.
Favorite moment is when they get pulled over by that cop, and they're pulled over by that cop, and they say, and she realizes that she's a doctor, that she has the doctor's coat on, and she transforms in front of him.
No, we can't, officer, we don't have time. We're on an emergency.
That's right, she's a doctor.
Oh, you're a doctor?
What do you think I am, a beautician?
I'm sorry, doctor, I didn't see your badge. What's the trouble?
The trouble is I'm taking this woman to the hospital and she's very sick.
Which one of you is sick?
I am. She is.
They're both sick.
And then they see when he offers to give them an escort, and Dolly just goes, oh, Lord. It's so good.
Oh. That I love it. Rap
I, but then it ends perfectly. It ends perfectly with, so that then they're driving out and you're like, well, what did they do with the body? And then it just, there's a janitor coming in and she's opening.
Okay. Well, you got to give a shout out to her because this is the best button in cinema. I have to say her name is S. Esther Sutherland.
Yes,
and Esther. She's incredible. Her character name in the IMDb is Janitress. But yes, Janitress. She literally like comes in. She sees it. She's like, "Oh my god!" And then she goes,
"Hey Vera, we got another stiff in the jar."
It's so good. And then she just shakes her head. She's like, "This has happened, clearly happened before." It's so good. It's my god.
It's great. My god. And then my second favorite moment in the movie happens next when Dabney Coleman just walks into work the next day after they think he's dead and they have no idea what's going to happen, and Lily Tomlin with the newspaper,
the paper is flying,
pulling it down, flipping back over the chair. She and Jane are such little clowns.
They're so good. That's the physical comedy. I was just like, I don't know how they came up with some of this stuff in the moment, but it is just iconic. It never stops being funny.
I don't know why that scene reminds me of my favorite thing to Google when I just need anything is when Lily Tomlin and I Heart the Huckabees does a dive into the car. Runs and does a dive into the backseat of a car is just my seeing Lily Tomlin do physical comedy is just the one of the few joys of this world.
There's also
she's limbs. She's all of a sudden limbs. You know, just like limbs are flying. And
she also has a moment in I Heart Huckabees where she's running across a lawn trying to be like very stealth, but there are sprinklers going off, and so she keeps getting shot by the sprinklers. That performance
she's a national treasure.
She is. Fuck.
So we had to talk about them imprisoning him. I mean, like that's literally the most important part of the movie. And I love how subtly it's set up. It so seeps into your mind, you don't even realize it. But they are all so well equipped to take over this office. Like she's been there, Violet has been there for 12 years. She's mm-hmm. been overlooked for a promotion. Mm-hmm. Dora Lee, very casually, when she's turning down Frank Hart, she says, I can sign your name better than you can. If I wanted to write a check, I would. Brilliant.
Pat Resnick just dropping in the little clues.
Yes, yes.
Coming back later. Yes.
It's so smart.
Smart.
And also my favorite thing that she drops in, we talked about the scene, Lily and her son. Lily is fixing a garage door.
Yes.
In that scene. And she's you know, single mom. She has to do it all herself. And then the garage door comes back around when they build this truly deranged contraptment to confine Dabney Coleman, which is at once like sadistic and also hilarious.
Yes. And also I will tell you, it's the only thing I remember from my childhood because it really informed. It sent off my gaydar, my gay feelings. I was like, I'm attracted to this bondage of this awful man tied up to a garage opener in a certain way. And I don't understand it, but I'm going to file that away as a formative thing in my mind.
For later. Save that for later. Like,
file it away. To be unpacked later.
Yes.
But I legit, like, this part legit got me tense. Like, the whole plot of, like, are they going to be able? I was tense. I was like, Pat Resnick was sending me there. I was like, shit. I had the real suspense thrillers of it all.
Yeah, they set up the ticking clock. They were like, we have 6 weeks. And this is what's going to happen. It is brilliant. The script is so sharp, so tight.
Oh, they break out a calendar for you to really even follow. They're like, okay, wife is back here.
Boy, I mean, it was just so easy. I just typed up this memo and signed our name.
Well, she doesn't get back until the 15th, and Missy doesn't return until the 24th.
Poor old Missy, don't you feel sorry for her? I think I'll have Hart send her some flowers in Tahiti.
We get the mergers and acquisitions of an empty warehouse, which I was just like, oh, this is my favorite business jargon that I don't understand. He has a warehouse that's supposed to be full of product. It's not.
We need
that's
some illegal. Memos.
Call the IRS. He's going to go. He's going to be in deep shit. I don't know why, but they got him.
Well, even then, computers were putting a glitch in people's lives. Like, it was all, they had to wait because it was a computer turnover. And like, come on, man. Technology, improve, please.
Also, shout out to Marion Mercer as Missy Hart, the wife of the Hart. Boss.
Yeah, she's great.
She's just so oblivious because she's supernaturally kind. Yeah. Like, he somehow married this woman who's just really kind. It's like if when Jason gets his rich husband, she's just happy to be rich, go on her vacation. She doesn't care what he gets up to.
Oh, don't care. Don't care. I will walk into anyone's office and be like, did my husband buy you another car? That big sweetie. And that apartment that he's renting for you? You love it, right?
She's so blind. Oh, my God.
She's so blind and I love it.
She's so sweet. You couldn't even hate her. She was adorable.
Yeah, she was just too nice. I mean, I love that you don't even really hate Roz in the end, because when they send Roz away to like the French immersion camp, she's on the plane just so like diligently like ready to learn French for Franklin Hart.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be mad at any of them because they've just been gaslit by this terrible man and this terrible system to kind of like work their role in it.
I feel like Roz was a pre-Karen Karen.
Yes.
Oh, that's the stunted Bob. That stunted, yes. Like.
She was just, oh my God. She was just a problem.
A traitor to her gender.
Yes. I'm like, what are you doing, girl? No.
Because isn't it Roz who gets, what's the character's name, who gets fired? The one who's in
Maria Delgado gets fired for talking about people's salaries.
Yes. Yeah. So she gets fired for trying to organize, basically, for even mentioning to somebody about your paycheck or how much you're making or how much someone else is making. And Roz is the one who's like, gets to the bottom of that. She's union busting in there.
Well, OG Karen was like, no union talk. I mean, she says that in the film. She's like, absolutely got to keep that too. And you know what killed me? Because like, okay, I've never worked an office job. I'm blessed and highly favored if I can turn on my computer. I'm just kidding. I never turn it off. Do people turn off their computers still? I never do. Because you have to turn it back on and it takes so much time. But when Roz is like,
Violet, just a moment.
Come on.
Just a moment. Violet?
Oh, yes, Roz. So sorry.
I have been meaning to talk to you about Mr. Hart's rules on office decor. Mm-hmm. We seem to be getting a bit lax in your section.
Oh, really, Roz? How?
Well, I have typed it up here. No coffee cups on the desks, no personal items left in view, photos.
That what's killed me, because if I have a desk, I want me to put on, you know what I would put on?
Imagine all the things you would put on it.
Okay, but yeah, I came up with this. I would put on a picture of the most sick, dying looking dog, like literally in its deathbed, just so that people, and no one would be mean to me. And I would just like be slightly weeping the whole time with just this like oversized picture of a dying dog. That would be my thing. See, it's smart. It's smart.
But in the movie, all they wanted was plants and to put their family pictures. It was just so sad. I was like, stop being so insane.
Okay, shout out to Roxana Bonilla Giannini, who plays Maria.
Yes.
Shout out to that team. I'm trying to shout out all these great actresses. And Peggy Pope, who plays Margaret the Drunk.
Margaret the Drunk. And again, gets her own callbacks, which I love.
She had an arc. She got clean.
Oh, Mr. Hart, it's so good to see you again.
Who are you?
Don't you recognize me?
No.
Margaret Foster.
The old lush?
Yes, that was me. But thanks to the company's alcoholics rehabilitation program you started, those days are over. And I'll never forget those wonderful letters of encouragement you sent. God bless you, Mr. Hart.
Good to see you.
Doesn't she look great?
Hold this.
Because why? Because women cared about her. Women invested in her and let her get the care that she needed. And she came back ready to work.
They just like build the matriarchy in these six weeks that they have him bound and gagged in his house. They get to like repaint the office, let people put things on their desk, let them have flexible hours, enlist in a alcoholics recovery system.
I mean, have childcare, which we are still fighting for today.
Yes.
This is crazy.
Wait, and they paid everybody the same. And they it was a good thing. It had to be undone at the end, which, hello, this is why we are where we are. But they, for those 6 weeks, it was Shangri-La. They were killing it.
That equal pay thing, though, that's got to go.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right as an incentive, but We don't need to keep on priming the pump.
No, sir, I don't think so.
Stands the test of time.
Colonel Sanders coming in there and like holding a baby. I was like, get that baby out of that awful man's arms.
Oh, fuck.
That is the great Sterling Hayden. Shout out.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. What I mean, so many things, Sterling Hayden.
Well, another he was in one of my favorites is Johnny Guitar.
Oh, with Joan Crawford.
Yes. Oh, which was full of all types of shenanigans and behind the scenes drama because, I mean, hello, Joan Crawford. So if you ever want to Google that mess, please do, because Sterling Hayden hates her and until he died. Oh my God.
Oh, can I just have to shout out another one of my favorite lines in this movie. When they have him all tied up and Jane Fonda's terrible ex-husband comes to the yes. window to try to ruin everything, Dick the Dick shows up and he thinks she's doing S&M, and when she's like marching him out, she's
this
like,
is your line, bitch.
Judy, this isn't you. You can't be serious.
Don't you tell me what I can or can't do. Those days are over. And if I want to have an affair or play sex games or do M&Ms, you can't stop me.
She's so cute. I love her.
I'm Nick God. Loves his M&Ms, so every time he goes, Nick's gonna, I know it in his little
whenever
his little
anyone
voice,
mentions any candy.
I can do M&Ms.
I'm so happy good. About it. Jane in this movie. And then just them ending it with them in the red, white, and blue, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so positive. It gives you this kind of positive ideal of what our world could be like, what our country could be like, if we just let the ladies take control.
Well, I agree. And I think it resonated so well with audiences. There were a couple of interviews where people talked about the experience of being in the theater watching it. And they talked about where they were taking it, Jane Fonda and that activist group that they were working with took it around to different places. And they would watch it. And then when it comes to the file scene, when she's trying to make copies and like everything is like going to hell. And they were like, people were yelling in the audience, like, push the stop button. So that's what they knew. They were like, people were like audience participating. And the other moment that people just stood up and like cheered is when Dolly is rebuffing Frank Hart's advance. And she was like,
so you've been telling everybody I'm sleeping with you, huh?
No.
Well, that explains it. That's why these people treat me like some dime store floozy. They think I'm screwing the boss.
That's not it at all.
Oh, and you just love it, don't you? It gives you some sort of cheap thrill, like knocking over pencils and picking up papers.
Now, let's don't get excited.
Get your scummy hands off of me. Look, I've been straight with you from the first day I got here, and I put up with all your pinching and staring and chasing me around the desk because I need this job, but this is the last straw.
All right, now wait. Let's just sit down and...
Look, I got a gun out there in my purse, and up to now I've been forgiving and forgetting because of the way I was brought up, but I tell you one thing. If you ever say another word about me or make another indecent proposal, I'm going to get that gun of mine. And I'm going to change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot. Don't think I can't do it.
And everyone just like erupts in the audience. Oh. I was just like, oh my God, I wanted to be there. I wish I was there.
It's so crazy that like, and then it like 10 years later, we have Working Girl.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still dealing with the same problems, you know, and 10 years after that, and like today we're having the Me Too movement. It's like, it makes it, I mean, I know it. It makes me realize what everyone means when they say like things just aren't getting better. Like, yes. And then people just get, I guess, tired of fighting. And then we have to do it again 10 years later. It's just so frustrating.
Well, the change is incremental. So we should not lose hope and heart. But think of someone like Jane Fonda, who is, I believe, 83 years old. This woman is still out there getting arrested for climate change. For different things that are happening, like with the pipeline. I forget which pipeline it was because they're so awful and they keep doing it. Jane Fonda is a G. Jane Fonda, if you don't be a Karen, be a Jane. Use your platform, use your power. But there has not been enough sweeping change, and not that we should be satisfied with incremental change. But at least there's something, and I just don't want people to lose heart because we should continue to fight.
And listen, change is slow. We like anytime, you know, we think something's starting and we think it's going to end like within a year,
like the ERA. We're still trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment. Come on, people.
I mean, oh, it's and insane.
There's always, And there's always going to be the backlash, right? Like for every 9 to 5, there's a Wall Street that's made, you know? Yes. There's every time we like have these moments, like, and that's what I was so scared. We were all so happy when Joe Biden was elected. And the other day I was listening, someone was saying like, the shark isn't dead. It just went out to deep water. So we have coming back to do. It's coming back.
Yeah. We'll always be prepared.
And let's acknowledge, LaToya, you are a positive change. You are climbing the top and paving a way. And I, you know, thinking about this, and you're going to give hope to a generation that really needs it by all of what you're achieving and accomplishing.
So. You are going to make me cry. Please stop. Thank you.
You do walk the walk. You amplify other screenwriters. I see you do it all the time on social media. And you... look, you practice what your diva Jane Fonda preaches.
Yes. I try to do everything I can to be a bridge, to be a ladder, to help people, because I didn't really have that many people to help me. So now that I'm in a position that I can help folks, it is really, really important to me to pay it forward. So it's just a part of my DNA. Thanks, Mom, for making me that way.
A real working woman, your mom.
Yes, a real working woman.
All the working
women. A single mom, a real working woman. All the working
moms. That's who this is for. Yes. Is your mom doing well?
She is. She's fantastic.
Good. Oh, yeah. This was for all the working moms, all the working ladies of the world. Unite. Yes. Organize. Join a union.
Yes.
If you can. I mean, fuck.
Look, we need all the battle angels we can get.
Yeah, right? We do.
It's going to take all of us.
We got to keep fighting. Battle angels fight, so let's keep fighting. That's never done. It'll never be done. And that's okay. There's joy in the fight. There's joy in the process.
Mm-hmm. And when you get weary, you can turn on 9 to 5. You can turn on Working Girl. You can turn on Norma Rae.
Yes.
And get your inspiration in from your divas like we do.
Yeah, also, that song slaps.
This podcast.
But play that song, because that song tells the story of us of trying to overcome. In that song, it's us trying to beat the odds.
That has to be the outro. You got to play that song as the outro of this
absolutely
episode.
Absolutely. Thank you everyone who has listened to all 100 episodes of this podcast and accompanying like 40 some Patreon episodes. We love you. We're so happy to do this with you every week.
You're probably like, how is LaToya? Is LaToya really a stan of everyone she claims to be? We can profess she doesn't come with notes. She doesn't. We're looking at LaToya. She doesn't look up Google things. Nick and I are. I'm Googling everything to be like, I don't even know the name of the fucking of the person we're talking about. And it's just coming from LaToya's encyclopedia diva mind.
I am too obsessive.
And so listen, kids, if you think this is the end of LaToya, you're dumb, you're wrong. On off mic, LaToya's like, so you know what I told you, right? And she started naming all of the other divas she was waiting in the wings to cover, because she is that much of a stan. She is why she's here for our 100th episode and our first third guest. We love you, Battle Angels. We love you, LaToya. Thank you all for sticking with us. Guys.
Can't wait to come back. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We love you.
We love you. Bye. Mwah. Working
9 to 5, what a way to make a living. That was great, you guys. Good job. Getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5, for service and devotion. You would think that I would deserve a fair promotion. Want to move ahead, won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes that man is out to get me. 9 to 5, yeah, they got you where they want you. There's a better life, and you think about it, don't you? It's a rich man's game, no matter what they call it, and you spend your life putting money in his wallet. 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely and no giving. Want to move ahead, but the boss won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes that man is out to get me. 9 to 5.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.